In that case, I'm surprised there aren't more naturists just wandering around.
Well, it's not been the warmest, has it?
The train is now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You might regard doing a podcast as a laughy, but I take it very seriously. Yes, I can tell. Right, so I'm just going to put the book club ones over there. Hang on a sec. Let's make a tidy desk.
Now, we need to make an announcement about that because the book club podcast, which is about a dutiful boy, that's going to come out on Monday. That's a bank holiday treat.
It's a Brucey bonus bank holiday.
Yeah. Yep. We thought that was just a nice thing to do because we're all heart.
It's a lovely thing to do, isn't it? Obviously, yes. Marvellous. But it's also because I'd booked the bank holiday off and then you realise you were working the bank holiday. But now we're both off. Don't worry, everybody. We're both off.
Yes, a bit of light rotor chat there. It's my fault completely. I'm just not organised enough and I hadn't booked it. And then I thought, oh, well, that's fine, I'll work it. And then I just began to be absolutely filled with resentment at the idea of working on a bank holiday when you weren't in particular. So I thought, oh, no, I'm not. Anyway, so now I've got a lovely long weekend to look forward to.
Can I say, just in our defence, because I know that lots of people have to work bank holidays, but you and I, in our time, have worked a lot of bank holidays, Christmas days, Boxing days, New Year's days and all of that kind of stuff. And it's one of the few little treats that I just quite enjoy.
In your dotage.
In I know. Yep, in my dotage of just thinking, oh, actually, no, I'd like to be off on a bank holiday.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness to us, and why would anyone be fair to either of us, we have done some ungodly hours over the years, without question. And I always think about the up all night election shifts when local elections are hoving into view with brilliant coverage, I have to say, promised across Times Radio. And I'll certainly be dipping in and out during the course of the night if I can get my Alexa Dot sorted out. I thought I'd set it up properly, but it doesn't respond very well. And she couldn't hear me today. And at one point I said to her, I am a broadcaster. You must be able to hear me.
Does she tell you that she can't hear you, or there's just silence?
Quiet.
Well, maybe your microphone's off.
What?
Yeah, that happens a lot to our... Can't really work out what it is, but it's got Google Home on it.
Okay, I thought I'd done so well because I plugged it in and it seemed to be completely aware of its surroundings and told me the weather almost immediately. And then on message, Mandy had a little moment and I asked Play Times Radio and she did it.
Yeah.
But this morning it's been apps all over the place. Anyway, I need to... It's all new to me, this. So I'm determined not to ask a young person how to sort it out.
No, you stick with it, girlfriend.
No, I'm going to do it.
But also then that will bond you with your Alexa. If you can actually operate her yourself.
Thank you. And if anyone says, what are you doing this bank holiday weekend? I can say quite truthfully, I'm trying to sort out the Alexa Dot.
Yeah. My worry is that Alexa might sense a vulnerability in you and take over.
Well, she can.
You may never be seen again.
Well, that's possible. So if she rolls in on Tuesday, and she will be rolling because she's a shape, spherical, then you can alert the authorities.
Yeah. I tell you what would be quite good fun, and I don't know whether we'd ever be able to manage this, but it would be quite funny, wouldn't it, if one of us could be replaced by an AI bot for a podcast. So if you could just get one of those highly programmable robot people and I'll happily volunteer to be replaced by a robot for an episode.
No, don't give it away, because the whole point would be guess which one isn't real.
And then you can... Well, that's an even better idea.
Well, I think we've slightly ruined it.
Yeah. Well, no, we won't tell people when it is, and we'll lob that at you further down the field. But you're absolutely right to say Times Radio is where you want to be for your local election, mayoral election and one by-election coverage. Coming your way, Callum McDonald and Matt Chorley are really putting in the shifts, aren't they? They're
really
both
are.
Doing kind of two lots in the evening and then very early in the morning, and then Matt's got his show from 10 till 1. And it will be brilliant because they just know their stuff. There won't be any erring or umming or having to look up some district council. They'll be completely across it, so we can highly recommend it.
Yeah, no, we can. My longest ever election night was with I was a co-presenter, and there was a very little heavy lifting on the word co there because I didn't get a lot to do. But I was in the company of a still working, notable Scottish broadcaster whose surname suggests he's poorly behaved. Do you know who it is?
I do. So just to be clear, it's not Nicky Campbell.
No, it's not Nicky Campbell. But the guy never shut up. I mean, that was...
Well, I know, but that is actually... No, I'm going to leap to his defence.
Why? Well, it was the longest 8 hours of my life.
Well, that is what he's being paid for. It's absolutely wrong of him not to have let you have more to say.
I'm sure he'd say.
But I do like the fluency sometimes.
Well, I think he's a great broadcaster. And it was so long ago that he had a system of filing cards.
I remember.
Do you remember?
Yes,
and he could leaf through
them.
So yeah. And it was a general election that long night. And I'm pretty certain that it was all alphabetical. So if there was something going on in Tunbridge Wells, he could just go to T, whip out the card, and it would say, you know, Tory MP, Sir What's It Fitz Biggs, as majority 189,323. In second place, Liberal Democrat, 6.
So do you think he was worried because you didn't have that?
I didn't have any filing cards. And every now and again, I would get to give the latest results that had come in that weren't interesting enough to have a reporter at them, but were just, you know, relatively run-of-the-mill. So constituencies that you'd expect to be Labour were indeed returning a Labour MP. So every now and again, and I'm talking every hour and a bit, I would just get the chance to read out.
That's not co-presenting, is it?
Somewhere up north, Labour hold. Somewhere down south, Tory hold. That sort of thing.
Yeah. Was,
honestly. And then I just remember the longest night of my life, but the worst time was just after 3 a.m, which I think, isn't that statistically...
That if you're going to leave this earth is the most likely time.
So between 3 and 3.30, if you are not used to keeping those hours, that is the toughest time to be up and awake. It really is. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway, I'm over it now, as you can all tell.
Good, good. Do you know what? I am very much hoping for the general election, whenever that's going to be, that you and I will be sent to counts, because I love a count. Do you love a count?
Oh, yes. Well, I used to get sent to Sunderland.
Oh, to see the racing.
To see the choreographed, really quick result.
Yeah.
But they lost last time. They weren't. They were second. I think it was Newcastle, actually, and they were livid. Yeah, absolutely livid. So they'll be trying to get that crown
back.
That's
a northeast derby, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is. Okay. But it is.
It is.
It's not something they take anything other than very seriously.
At this forthcoming general election, there are 11 cabinet ministers, aren't there, who are not certain of retaining their jobs.
Yeah, that's true.
So there are going to be some were-you-up-fors, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And... Yep, I'm going to very much hope I can take my large tartan thermos and my Snickers bars and head to one of those. It's the expression on people's faces, which is a joy on radio to then have to describe. So, you know, you've got to let the result come through live, obviously, but then you have to say what everybody looked like on the stage and that kind of magnanimity that is attempted by some people, where understandably they're actually thinking, I've been sacked.
Yeah.
And in that moment, most people don't manage to look magnanimous and dignified.
Hard.
No, it is. I mean, you know, it's their livelihood that's gone. So, look, so much to play for. Let's move on from politics because, apart from anything else, young Eve has got that expression on her face which just says, crackle!
For God's sake. And that's because our guest today is Asma Mir. And she has written a book that we both loved in its original hardback form when it was called...
A Pebble in the Throat.
And now it's called...
A Glasgow Girl.
Because it's in paperback. And the people of Glasgow like a paperback.
They do. And we're going to talk to Asma about the book, about... The book's really funny as well in places, and it's not the first kind of top note that you get from the book, because it's a really, really meaty memoir about racism.
And you hear from her mum as well, don't you?
Yes, yeah. And, you know, just really beautifully told. But there's so much fun in it too. And one of the things that she did want to talk about this time around was the very long list of films that she hasn't seen, because they just didn't watch films back in the day in her household. So we're going to talk about that, and we're also going to talk about dating, and it's a really lovely interview, and it's quite long, because it's worth it. We're worth it. She's worth it.
It's a bold editorial statement there. Now, let's move on to your emails.
Good night, Kiwi, is one from Anna, who says, you mentioned recently the days of television finishing at 10:30 p.m. with a national anthem and a black screen. Here in New Zealand, between 1975 and 1994, we had Good Night, Kiwi, a short animation of a Kiwi as a television camera operator and his cat closing production for the night and bedding down, either in the camera or at the top of the TV mast in a satellite dish. You can see these on YouTube by searching up Good Night, Kiwi. Well, that's creative, isn't it? Because we just, as you said, we just went to a black screen, didn't we?
And then they played the national anthem. But somebody does say, or did say, in a, you know, a very gentle way, good night. You know, there was an element of compassion and understanding there. But we certainly didn't have a lovely cuddly thing. That was
no.
Nice. A cuddly element would have been gorgeous, wouldn't it?
Well, it would. And if we were going to have something that was animated,
yeah. What
would it be?
Gosh, well, I'm a bit out of sync with what's popular with the kiddies, but then it needs to be something that's popular with everybody. I'd like a jaunty good night from, oh, God, I mean, we're talking about somebody who's big in entertainment, or would you like to hear it? Paddington, says Eve. Yes.
Oh, yeah, it would have to be something like that, wouldn't it?
It would have to be something like Paddington is, I think, universally loved, although, I mean, there are haters everywhere, and we thought everybody had loved our book club choice this month, and they sort of almost all did, but some people didn't. So there must be somebody out there who really doesn't like the cut of Paddington's jib. If that is you, you can tell us, I guess. Jane and Fee at times.radio. You're going to be an outlier though there, surely, aren't you?
Well, I hope that you don't spark some kind of enormous thread of Paddington haters.
Well, that's the last thing I want to do, but I'm just, this is a safe space, and there might be some people who just can't stand him.
Okay. Please don't do the Morris dancer thing again. Please don't.
Do you remember when the author of Paddington, Uncle Michael Bond, died? And it wasn't that long ago, actually. And at Paddington Station, people were leaving flowers with the Paddington statue. I thought that was so sweet.
That's lovely.
Yeah, that is. It is so lovely. Yeah. I mean, actually, you're right. I don't want to hear from anyone who doesn't like it. What's wrong with you?
If you don't like Paddington, just keep it to yourself. It's nasty. Do you want to do one?
Yes, I've got one here from somebody who wants to be anonymous. And actually, I really feel for this correspondent. She's had a miscarriage. She miscarried her second child at 8.5 weeks. She does say her first child arrived safely and is a happy 16-month-old. She goes on to say, I just can't find the word. Upsetting, traumatic, emotional. I'm trying to process it all. Hopefully, I'll have a day when I don't cry in the not-so-distant future. I've had brilliant support from my husband and daughter, whose smiles and cuddles have lifted me daily, though also reminding me of what we're missing with a second. I often think how remarkable it is that 20% of pregnancies end this way, and I know just two people that this has happened to. We are surrounded by brave and resilient women who've been through this, but we don't know who. This gives me strength to realise so many others have been through this. Another thing I want to mention is the knowledge and information about miscarriage. The staff at the early pregnancy unit have been kind and caring, but, and this is what I really wanted to mention, the information about the physical miscarriage itself was way off. I won't go into detail, but the description of pain and what to expect was underplayed. I was grateful to have been through a vaginal birth, as I would otherwise have been woefully unprepared and likely to be in a bit of a panic. So to that listener, I'm so sorry you've been through this. It is utterly grim. And I just think she's right to say that it is sometimes underestimated. It is not just a painful business. It's quite gruesome and messy, and it isn't over all that quickly either. I know some women have a D&C and they'll go into hospital and they'll have the... It's an absolutely dreadful phrase which they use, which is something like the elements of pregnancy, or somebody will know, but it's a grim medical term for what they do in that procedure, and it can leave you utterly shattered. So you will feel better. I mean, I've had miscarriages, and I think they are underestimated as an experience because they are awful and grim, and you are sapped of all the pregnancy feel-good hormones like that. Gone. And with that comes just a shed load of grief. So to that person, things will get better, honestly. And how brilliant that you've had a child, you know you can have one. I'm almost certain, I'm not a doctor, but I'm almost certain you'll have another.
Yeah, I would concur with everything that you've said there. I also think it might be helpful, if we're on this topic, for people who've been through the experience, to better inform people who haven't about what the best thing to say to them is. Because actually, a couple of friends who had stillborn at full term babies, Jane, in those moments afterwards, I felt so inadequate in what the best thing to say would be.
Yeah.
Or something helpful. There's so much that you must want to be able to put into words. And, you know, I think we don't talk about that at all, actually.
No, we don't. And it's because, I guess it's because it's one of the...
Oh, it's the most tragic thing.
To know, isn't it?
And to those women, you know, and to you who have miscarried, I think the conversation around it is, it's so pressed down, isn't it? It's one of those things that is just so horrendous to think about. We try and silence it, and we try and move on, and we try and say, you know, I hope you'll feel better, or, you know, whatever it is. But I don't think we have yet learnt what might be more helpful than that.
No, and we would like to know, so do let us know. I mean, it is, as our correspondent says there in the email, it's not uncommon. It's really common. But, God, it takes it out of you in every sense, in every sense of that phrase. So to that person, thank you, and lots of love, really, from us both. So you'll be okay.
Right, we've had loads about Ofsted, and we were talking about those one-word summaries, weren't we? And actually, this one we were kind of talking about exams as well, weren't we? And an anonymous mum has written in to say, I just had to respond to the emailer who said, imagine if pupils were given one-word judgments, outstanding, good, needs improvement, etc. And I'd just like to point out that that is exactly what happens both in annual reports and in the exam systems themselves. I have two neurodivergent girls, and their exam results will never reflect their true capabilities because they just don't fit the model that's being assessed. The exam gradings may be more nuanced than three categories, but it's still a very arbitrary way of qualifying someone's intelligence and capability. I'd be hard-pressed to disagree with anything that you've said there. And I do understand that there has to be some way of comparing pupils' understanding of what they've been taught to the next pupils, but it just seems so brutal in a world that is seeking to be more nuanced, and all the technology that's advanced, Jane, that enables us to, you know, leave a review about whether or not the purchase of a bag of nails has gone well for both parties.
What did you think of our delivery of the dusters?
Well, I was sent an email the other day asking me to rate my customer experience of setting up a direct debit. I just don't really understand who you're asking me to grade in this.
You've got to feel sorry for the poor sod who's got to read the responses.
I know. But you know what I mean? When we're being asked to do all of those things, it seems extraordinary that we're still just going, one mark for a child, you know, for entire 7 years of learning in chemistry or whatever it is. So, yeah, let's talk about that a bit more.
And here's someone else who's up against it in this department. It's 8 o'clock and I'm just heading home from the primary school where I teach year six. It's a couple of hours later than usual because today we got the call. Yes, 12 hours from now, an Ofsted inspector will arrive for 2 days of what they describe, and I love this, what they describe as 2 days of deep diving and light touches. I'm sure there'll be a fair amount of grilling and going down rabbit holes as well.
That just sounds wrong.
Yes. We'll receive a one-word grading. Yes, they are sticking with that system. So I was glad to hear Fee say there are so many other things a parent should do to find out about a school. I work as part of a fantastic team with great senior leaders, and I keep telling myself he'll come and he'll go, and afterwards we'll all still be here doing what we do. The children are brilliant, hilarious, fun, tough, and inspiring, and yes, sometimes infuriating. In any one day, we are counsellor, nurse, friend, parent, as well as teacher. So after the inspector has been and gone and graded us, we're going to carry on. Well, thoughts and prayers, and I hope it all goes well. And, I mean, I'm always interested in who the inspectors are, and often, I think, almost always, they are former teachers, aren't they? They can't just... I couldn't suddenly decide to go in, become an Ofsted inspector and do deep dives, light touches. No, but that kind of horrendous phrase, deep diving and light touches, that needs to be made illegal.
It does. But also, I don't understand what that means when you're grading a whole school. Where's the light touch?
It's just... It's the kind of word cobblers that just has infected our language. And I know there's always been a certain amount of pomposity around admin and institutions and authorities, but that's just... It's just silly. Bunkum. It's utter bunkum.
Now, Tim has sent us an explainer, Jane.
A man to explain things. By the way, lots of you trying to guess the comedian who likes to play his own material and to invited house guests. It wasn't Russ Abbott, as suggested by one emailer. I love all this. Keep them coming.
So Tim has said, I wanted to respond to your joint consternation concerning public nudity, such as the Macclesfield Cafe incident, as it's now going to be referred to. In England and Wales, public nudity is not in itself a legal offence. The offence of indecent exposure is where a person intentionally exposes their genitals with the intent that someone will see them and feel alarm or distress. And that's part of the Sexual Offences Act 2003. And key to the offence is intent. The common law offence of outraging public decency requires an act of such a lewd nature that it outrages public decency. It occurs in a public place in the presence of two or more people, regardless of whether they actually witnessed it. Key to the offence is the nature of the act. And Tim says, I'm neither a lawyer nor a naturist nor a flasher for that matter. Thank you for clearing that up, Tim. But it seems to me that a naturist going about their normal daily business has no intention of causing alarm or distress. So the question here is whether the simple act of nudity in public is of such a lewd nature as to outrage public decency. Personally, I don't think it is, although I would have been surprised and disquieted had I been in the position of your correspondent. And I know many people who would have found it highly offensive. So thank you for detailing all of that. I'm surprised that you need a lewd offence to have happened in the presence of two or more people. I would have thought if it happens to just one person, it's still a lewd offence.
Well, we've also got some correspondence here from a magistrate in no less a place than Berkhamsted.
Sit up straight, please.
Berkhamsted. But how do you say it?
Berkhamsted.
Oh, is it Berkhamsted?
No, I don't know.
Berkhamsted. Anyway, this lady is a magistrate. In order for someone to be convicted of indecent exposure, it must be proved that they've exposed their genitals deliberately, this is the key point, and with the intention of causing somebody alarm or distress. Merely being naked in public is not enough.
Yeah, so Tim and the magistrate are absolutely on it for its legal context, but... And in that case, I'm surprised there aren't more naturists just wandering around.
Well, it's not been the warmest, has it? But that's a really perfectly good point. I think if you're going to do it en masse, I think you probably need to contact the authorities.
Well, wasn't
because they do that naked bike ride, don't they?
Yeah, and there was a naked rambler who kept on getting into trouble.
Right, nuisance. I don't know what's happened to him.
I don't know.
I have interviewed him.
Have you?
Yeah. I don't really get it. I think the law needs to be worked on here. And I can't believe for a second that many women are done for indecent exposure. I just don't believe that happens.
No. Well, I mean, you and I know from our own childhoods that a flasher just meant a man.
Yeah.
There was never a young male friend of mine who was being warned that there was a female flasher on the loose in the cloisters of Winchester Cathedral. That just wasn't a conversation that was ever being had.
Surely.
And for a while there was.
What that in the cloisters of Winchester Cathedral?
Yeah, well flashers were quite... it was quite a common offence, I think. Have you been flashed at?
I haven't, no.
Okay. Well, and I'm not going to make a joke about
it. No, because it's not funny.
It's just so weird and horrible.
It wasn't a member of the clergy, though, was it?
But anyway, if anyone has any more insights into that, and I suppose just to bring up the terrible loos with their pornographic images in them and stuff like that, you see, I'm caused distress by that. So if that's perfectly allowed, am I just meant to take my distress and, you know, go and have a whittle somewhere else? I don't know. I don't really understand
it. Just go back into the pub and wet yourself. Good. See how they like it.
Saturday night. Right. This one comes about bank holidays, travelling on a Monday. Dear Jane and Fee, I've only just caught up with your Monday episode and I found my interest peaked. I love that word, peaked. Within the first few minutes, I don't know where Fee is going on holiday, but a useful tip for the future is that Monday till Monday is always the best plan for any holiday in Spain. This is because Monday is the traditional weekly holiday for hospitality workers, so many bars and restaurants are closed, and even in those which are open, menu choices are limited because one should never order fish on a Monday. That's so true.
That is true, yeah.
And I always think as well, don't eat paella on a travel day. That's been learnt through experience. A lot of museums, galleries and other attractions are also closed, so Mondays are a good day to travel because other options are limited.
Thank you. That was really helpful.
That's very helpful.
I mean, sometimes this podcast is genuinely, it's of use.
Well, I mean, if the takeaway from our entire careers is not to travel on Mondays in Spain, I'm happy.
And get a G-hick.
Oh, no, stop it. Everybody's got a G-hick. Who wants a G-hick now?
Well, I thought that was worth mentioning again.
Okay. Do you want another one about Monday to Monday
holidays?
We'll
keep it brief because we need to bring in asthma. Waiting.
This one comes from Alice, who says, we also found ourselves booking a Monday to Monday villa holiday this year. However, we've decided to fly back late on the Sunday evening, primarily, so we're home for the Monday. But also because we often find...
That's very sensible, isn't it?
So sensible. But also because we often find that the final night is spent in anticipation of the early rise to get out of the villa in time the next day anyway. And so this way, we will still get a full final day of the holiday, but we'll wake up in our own beds on the Monday rather than spending a day in transit.
Well, why not come home a couple of days early? 3 or 4. And then get the really properly feel the benefit.
You see,
if you take that to its logical extreme, that's where we are. Just don't go away at all. Be like me.
I think I'm just too tight or in love with my holidays to be able to sacrifice a final night. And I know what you mean, because then you've got to wake the kids up at 5 o'clock and everyone's grumpy. You haven't cleaned out the fridge and you don't know whether or not you should take the bedding off and all that type of stuff. But I don't know. I've paid for it. I'm going to have it, Jane.
You're going to have it. I've just caught a glimpse on the telly in here of our friend Jamie Redknapp.
Is he advertising his slip-on shoes?
He's advertising something else at the moment. The man's never off. But we were laughing earlier in the week because he...
Was that Jamie? Wasn't that Frank Lampard?
Oh, is it his cousin? It's his cousin, Frank. You're absolutely right. I think that might have been Frank. But Jamie Redknapp, he used to play for Liverpool, son of Harry, he has got a very lucrative tie-up with Skechers. It's not a very glamorous product. They're good Skechers. My mum wears them, but, you know, she's 90.
No, but also because one of their USPs, and I'm sorry that is an oxymoron, is that you don't have to bend down to put them on.
Yeah, and fair play, because listen...
Well, fair play to your mum, but, you know, you would have thought after a lifetime in sport, you'd still be flexible enough to be able to bend down to put your shoes on.
Jamie, what's gone wrong? You used to be quite nippy.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on. Settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books. Contacts. Calendar. Double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind.
When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to monday.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Asma Mir is our guest this afternoon, star of Times Radio, early morning audio partner of The Stig Able. And last year, she wrote her memoir about a life growing up in Glasgow, often dealing with the casual and not so casual racism of late 1970s and early 1980s Scotland, her family's expectations of her and of life in this country. And the beautiful conceit of the book is that it's a memoir which is also written by her mum. So it takes us, the reader, back to an older generation of women and expectations and their experience of life in this country. Asma came in to chat to us earlier. We started by talking about why the book, now out in paperback, has a different title now.
You know, when you write your first book, you take it so personally, like, this is what I want to call it because X, Y, and Z. And so I wanted to call it A Pebble in the Throat for long, long reasons to do with a particular...
Asma's just hit the microphone. Do you understand how a studio
works?
No,
I don't. At this time, I can't speak. I can't, you know, my motor skills are not good. Let's try that again, shall we? I wanted to call it that, A Pebble in the Throat, and everyone was fine with that. And then I think there was... A lot of people were asking me, why is it called Pebble in the Throat? Why is it? Which is fine, because then you can tell them. But I was beginning to have this nagging doubt that there was a little bit of a kind of... loss of connection. I've done it again.
Don't worry.
Banging the microphone. Between what the book was about and the title. So when it came to paperback, took some advice from the publishers and also from Satnam Sangera, who's amazing first book, The Boy with a Top Knot, in the hardback had a completely different title. And
he said,
do it, do it, do it. It was called If You Don't Know Me By Now.
Okay.
Which is a lyric from a song, but doesn't mean that much. And The Boy with a Top Knot, it says exactly what it is. And I think actually sometimes you do need that.
Yeah. So your republication, the paperback version, is A Glasgow Girl. Mm. Do you miss Glasgow?
I think you've got to be so careful what you say because you don't want to be cancelled in Glasgow or by Glaswegians. I used to miss it a lot more than I do now. I think maybe because I moved away from Glasgow roughly about 98, 99, and it's been a long time. It's like 25 years. Is that so? I'm almost reaching a midpoint actually, where it was maybe 25 there and 25 here. And I think the longer you stay away, the less connection you have with the place. Obviously, my entire family are now there. My brother used to live in London. He moved back to Glasgow, weirdly, surprisingly. So all my family are still there, and I do go back. But I don't refer to it as home anymore. And I did used to say, oh, I'm going back up the road. I'm going home, you know, because home usually is where your parents are. So I don't know whether that's a age thing, years, you know, how many years I've spent here, or whether it's just a kind of gradual disconnection from the place that you don't live anymore.
And do you have that thing which often happens where when you go back, you're made to feel like the person who's deserted the city and the family? I think it's quite a unique feeling, that one, isn't it?
It's very interesting because I think especially amongst siblings, and I don't know whether it's probably not a particular South Asian thing. It's probably with everyone, actually, that quite often you get two siblings at least, and one of them has stayed near the parents and they do all the hard work and all the taking to hospital appointments and all that stuff as the parents get older. But the flip side is they've also enjoyed quite a bit of free childcare as well. All I'm going to say, and then you've got people like me swanning off to that London, not really helping out with anything, but having no childcare. And let's face it, the last couple of years, I could really have done with that. Mm. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Do you find a similar thing when you go back to Crosby, that you are permanently the person who left, even though, ironically, you're back?
But my sister left as well, you see. So this is... Oh. But I think it's a really good question and I do want to think about this. In the 1980s, in the early 1980s, you had to leave Liverpool. Okay. I mean, and I, you know, it's just an economic necessity. Not everybody did, but an awful lot of my generation did. And some did go back, but most of us haven't. And so it is, I wonder though, what happens to people who leave London, don't go abroad, but leave London for another part of the UK?
Oh.
Is that, do people judge that in the same way?
Probably not.
I don't think they do. Yeah. I think it's going to London.
That London. You have to say that London.
That London is a particular... It can
bugbear.
Be a, it can be a bugbear, can't it? I don't know why that is.
I think for
it's
all
because
of
you've,
us...
You've got ideas above your station.
Is that it?
It must be, don't you
And
think?
I think, I mean, Glasgow has quite a bit in common with Liverpool and that probably would be one of them. That slightly, more than slightly, judgmental thing.
Yeah, they're definitely... Glaswegians are quite judgy, and I include myself in that.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm absolutely a part of this,
I think the interesting thing for all of us, because we've all brought up our children in London, you know, I assume your daughter, your daughters, my two, are born Londoners. Yeah. You know, mine were born in Camden. It's whether they will go or whether there's something about the city living, because we all came to a bigger city, didn't we? That was was the necessity for you. Yeah. It was the desire, there's the draw of it.
Yeah.
And I often say to mine, choose a nice, sensible market town where you can find decent accommodation. The parking's
well, you can afford
easy.
Things, the parking's
but don't
easy.
Go abroad. That's the thing. Yeah. I don't want them to go abroad.
No, neither do I.
And I wonder
goodness.
Whether it might be easier to go, more likely perhaps, to go abroad from London. Because London is a massive place with so many possibilities. And if you're going to try and better that, you're going to have to leave the UK.
I have a feeling that my daughter says that she wants to go and live in Glasgow. She says this all the time. And I think that's because it's just me and her. And then when she goes to Glasgow, it's all these people and she loves that. But she does. And
she could just be trying to wind you up.
It's more than likely, Jane, more than likely. And she also said that she is Scottish. So there we go. She's Scottish, not English. She's Scottish, which is interesting.
Does that make you feel proud?
It does a bit.
Yeah, I guess.
I've got to say.
Work that one out.
Scottish and British.
Yeah. So
she sounds very English.
London doesn't feature that highly in your in your regard.
No.
We've got so much to talk about and not enough time to talk about it. Mm. And both Jane and I had read your really fantastic piece, which was in the Times. Was it the Sunday Times about dating?
It was the Saturday Times magazine.
Yeah. Where you were very honest about being divorced and now at the stage post-divorce where you're quite like to go dating again.
Yeah. Well, in theory.
In theory, yes.
That was why you wrote the article.
Yes. Thank you, Jane. Exactly.
But what has happened since then?
Not good things.
Well, no, you say that because we need to say that Asma's already told us that she's had some... Well, I mean, I suppose it was inevitable, and it must have been one of the reasons why you probably wondered about whether you should write that article, which I also, by the way, thought was incredibly honest and well done to you for writing it.
Thank you.
But you must have had misgivings about writing it because of the attention you might get as a result.
You know, I'm so naive. I honestly didn't.
You didn't?
I just didn't think that anyone... I tried to write quite a nuanced piece, but nuance doesn't always work with certain people. And my point of the article was, you know, will I ever date again? As in, it's a rhetorical question. It's not, I want to date again and help me now, find me a man. It wasn't that. It was kind of like, I'm not really sure how to do this. Because the last time I was on a date was 20 years ago and everything was so different then. And what's happened, of course, people take it all different ways. And so many people got in touch and said, I totally get it. Yes, I'm the same. I just don't know what to do. A lot of men got in touch and said, I feel exactly the same way as you. I just don't know what to do and I'm just not going to bother. And that was the end of it. And that's nice. But then I have had quite a few emails from men who obviously think that I was fishing for a date, that I'm lonely and sad and all those things.
Did that come from a good place, though, do you think?
Yes, I'm sure it did. But the thing is, I don't feel lonely at all because I am constantly being chatted at by an 8-year-old, you know, so I'm never lonely and I'm definitely not sad. I just honestly feel, sometimes I'm very tired, but that's to do with getting up 3 o'clock. But I don't feel sad or lonely. If I did, I would say, and I may do in 5 or 10 years. But anyway, some men obviously thought that I was looking for a date, which I honestly wasn't. So I've had a few emails. Would you like to
We would very
hear
much
some?
Like to hear some.
Okay, obviously I'll protect their anonymity, but, you know, there's random people from all over the world. Loved your single article. Bit long and a little boring, so just took the first part. But guess what? I would love to take you to a cute coffee shop someday, so why don't you email me? Your contact info said fill in the form if not urgent, but given I'm a month younger than you, time is not on our side, so we better get cracking with this dating malarkey. That's one.
Oh, my word.
I like the way he also found time to judge the quality of the piece, which he hadn't actually bothered to finish.
But to open with that, wow.
He's trying to be a bit, like, contrary and, yeah. you know, all the rest of it. Anyway, I got one this morning while I was doing an interview with another radio station.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say the name, but let's just say that there's a first name and a surname and then the third after it, okay?
Yeah.
Hi, how you doing? You are really beautiful. I'd love to talk to you sometime and get to know you better. I'm 51 and single. I live in Minnesota. That's it.
Okay. Well, to be fair...
I'm intrigued. Yes.
I'm not so intrigued.
Are you in the market for a long distance thing?
No, of course not.
I always think I could probably cope with a submariner, someone who's away for months on end, allowing me to do my own thing.
I don't think so. I still want to meet someone organically, but we had a conversation about this, Fee, didn't we?
We
where
did.
It's probably, you know, it's the odds are that ain't going
to
happen.
I'm here to tell you, it doesn't happen.
It's not going to happen, is it?
No. I don't think it does, unfortunately. But on the subject of doing the dating apps and doing online dating.
Which I've never done.
No, and nor have I. Yeah. And I realise that's one of the many reasons why I'm single.
Yeah.
But at the same time...
But do you want to be single?
Well, it's a good question. Sometimes, absolutely, I'm with you a trillion billion percent.
Do you want to live on your own?
Oh, do I?
Because I do.
I haven't really in my life ever lived on my own. So the kids are still at home coming and going.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, you've got Dora.
And I've got an abandoned tabby cat.
Aww.
Yeah. No, she's not very nice. I love her. We all love her, but she's not a very nice cat. That's it's just one of those things. Her behaviour is questionable.
Okay.
But I do think, to go to your point about whether you are happy being single, I would say 90% of the time I am, but that 10% is, it's important and it needs to be acknowledged.
Yeah, all I want is like to go out for a nice dinner and then maybe hold hands, walk home, peck on the cheek, goodbye, you go your way, I'll go mine. I'll be happy with that.
Well, that's a good way to start. let's sort of start with that. Also, I think it's just worth saying that it's a little bit like childbirth. You don't often hear the stories of women in particular who just had relatively incident-free births.
Yes.
Nothing much went wrong. Yes, it was painful, but, you know, I'm all right now and the baby's lovely and blah, blah. Yeah. And it's the same with what I've heard...
I suppose.
...about the current dating planet, is that the only stuff you get...
Yeah.
Fee's got a positive story to tell.
Yeah, and so is my sister. She's getting married to someone that she met on an app.
But a lot of people just want to tell
you
about
that. That's true.
And that doesn't encourage me.
No, but... rhetorical question.
Yeah.
Do we want, and it's nothing to do with age, at this stage in our lives, do we want to be, I don't know, standing naked in front of another man? I'm not sure I do. Sorry if that's a bit X-rated, but, you know, I don't think I do. Don't look at me like that, Fee.
No.
Maybe not standing, sitting.
But he might.
No, stop, because the type of emails we're now going to get.
This isn't going to help.
You can cut this bit out, it's fine.
It's dreadful.
I was thinking about it the other day.
But I think Jane's point is really key, though, that, you know, you hear
so... Jane's really thinking about it. Look at
so
her face.
So many. I can't look at her now. Not in this moment, Asma. You do hear the terrible... stories about dating apps, you know, and it's like seeing the shark's fin in the bay. It's just like, I'm never going to get in the water again.
Yeah.
But there are so many positive experiences, and I just think, you know, mine is a positive experience. Yeah. And after I divorced my husband, I just had no intention of ever, ever being in a relationship again. And I was happy to have made that decision. But then I got to the pandemic and the lockdowns.
Yeah.
And you know when everybody just ran back into their homes?
Yes.
So I ran back into mine and I found myself there going, okay, well, this is actually the reality.
Yeah.
Because... you know, in the previous world, I've been really busy. I had work, I had friends. One of the kids was still at primary school, which means you have a community that you see every day. And it was the lockdown that made me think, I actually don't want this for the rest of my life. I don't want this to just be me with just, you know, one kind of, you know, one butt on the sofa night after night.
Yeah. Making an actual indentation.
Massive indentation.
Yeah. Well,
that
no,
actually,
I'm,
no,
yeah.
The upholsterer said there's nothing we can do with that cushion.
you should see that sofa.
You got to get a new one. But the dating app thing, I'm just here to say, I think if you're really honest and also if you're just a, you know, if you're just... set yourself a really kind of realistic target. And by that, I mean you will meet lots of people who you don't have very much in common with and who you don't particularly like. That happens in the real world
That's true.
And you do get through them. And then, you know, somebody, you just have an affinity. And I would never have met my partner without a dating app.
That's true.
And the affinity, we're actually very much in the same world. We're of the same age. You know, we've probably been at the same gigs or parties in London before, but we would never have had the confidence to talk to
you
each other.
You feel very exposed, though. You feel very exposed. Would you feel exposed doing that,
Jane? God, which is why I don't do it.
Yeah.
Because you have, but you have to make yourself vulnerable.
Yeah,
and I'm not, and I'm not particularly good at doing
neither
that.
Neither am I. Neither am I.
And so it's a, and also I think it's just worth saying because I'd be really interested in the reaction from other people to this. I think sometimes the concept of being contented and single is quite a challenge to the world.
Yeah,
particularly if you're female.
Yeah,
because you know I am, as I say, 90% of the time I'm absolutely fine.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, there are a lot of people who find that. Ooh.
Yeah.
That's, it's just a
but
little
it used to
bit...
But they used to be like that with me as well when I didn't have any children because I didn't have a kid until I was 43 and they're always a bit like...
Exactly.
I used to be challenged all the time on it.
I bet you did. Which club are you
It got
in?
Really, really wearing after a while. I've told the story before about this man at a party. He was a friend of my ex-husband's, which says a lot about that. And that he put his hand in front of my face and went like this. Tick, 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 tick.
Good God.
Your biological clock is ticking.
Can I say that? That is outrageous.
No.
In a social setting.
Kicked in where the sun didn't shine, but I didn't.
Wow.
Gosh.
Okay. I just excused myself.
Yes,
I was so annoyed.
You've not met the best of men along the way, Asma, at all. But also,
like
don't you think that there are quite a few men out there of our age who would like to only have a girlfriend they see when it's convenient for them, maybe when their kids aren't around, they've got other things that they want to concentrate on too.
Yeah.
I don't think it's unique to us to want to still have some freedom within a relationship. I think if you know yourself, doesn't it stand to reason?
Let's say something really controversial. Is it true that a lot of, not all men, but a lot of men, want when they are divorced, they tend to remarry and couple up much quicker than divorced women? I think that the stats bear that out. And I think some men like to be in a relationship because they like to be looked after.
Yeah.
They like to have someone else there.
Definitely.
Know, whatever it is. And there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with saying, oh, I want to be, you know, looked after, as long as that doesn't mean like basically cleaned up after. It just means like someone else being there.
Sometimes it can be.
Sometimes it can, of course. I'm trying to be as fair. There's lots, so many nice guys out there. I just haven't met any, but
yeah,
it's not a priority. So stop emailing me.
Okay. But if you'd like Asma to be your housekeeper, she also does a bit of radio work.
But also, you just have to be so careful who you introduce to your children
know,
as well, which is such a massive, massive thing.
Yes.
Let's just give the book some welly, shall we?
Let's do that.
I forgot we were here for a reason.
I know, it's fine.
We part company. Fine. Lovely chat, though. I think it's so interesting to
talk about. Well, I think it really is interesting.
Later in life dating.
Yeah, and I think we do need to talk about it. And I really, really know that we're going to get loads of emails now from people on every side of this argument. It's not an argument. Every side of this experience.
Yeah. And we'll talk more off air.
We're never off air. Not even on off air are we off air.
There's a fantastic list in your book of films that you haven't seen. Mm. And it is, well, I mean, it's 2 pages long, isn't it? And we just wanted to go through some of them with you, just so people really know the gaps that there are in
And then
your
you tell me
experience.
Whether you've seen it.
Okay. But can you explain why you hadn't seen any films as a normal
because,
films as a kid?
Because you had to see films in those days, you had to actually go to the cinema, right? You couldn't, you know, sit in your room and watch it on Netflix or pay $15.99 or whatever ridiculous price it is. So you had to actually go out. And at that period in my life, I really didn't have any friends because of all the kind of bullying that had gone on. So I was just at home in my room and never got to go to the cinema. So that whole period of my life, I didn't go to the cinema at all. And it kind of, then it got too late. People say to me, oh, you need to watch Dirty Dancing now. And I'm like, what's the point, really? No, it's not going to, these things are probably not going to stand up that well because of, you know, the passage of time. So I'll probably never see any of these films. But
well,
normal teenagers did.
So do you find you quite often that people will make a cultural reference that just leaves you blindsided?
Yes.
And I'm
quite happy now just to say I've not seen that. Because it's a thing on The Breakfast Show on Times Radio. It's like, oh, what have you seen? Have you seen this film? No, you've not seen this film, Asma.
Yeah. Footloose makes no sense to you.
I've seen
Kevin
the
Bacon.
Video on Top of the Pops because they had it was a song that got into charts, and I've seen clips from the film on Top of the Pops. That's it.
Okay, E.T.?
No.
You should see that.
Should I?
And I think your daughter would love it too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Shall I just pick some random ones out and we can just try and give you a kind of one-liner as to what you might have missed in life by not having seen Superman. The theory that men have special powers and if they just put on a cape, it'll all be all right.
Okay.
That's
I might give that a miss.
That's only once you've done their washing and ironing.
You've got to wash the cape first.
Yeah, okay.
Somebody has to iron that cape. It will be you.
9.5 weeks.
Oh, I have seen that.
So that's a sexy one, isn't it?
It's dead sexy. Actually, I didn't find it. It's Mickey Rourke, isn't it?
Yeah. So you don't know what to do with an ice cube.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Maybe I need to find out what to do with an ice cube if I ever go on a date. Third date.
Yeah, they're having a sexy scene.
Not unless the temperature in Britain goes up.
And also, I don't remember in that scene with the ice cube that somebody had to go to the fridge, get out the ice cube tray, bash it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Only to find that all of them fall out when you only wanted one.
Exactly. Someone must know how to do that properly.
Exactly.
There's probably a short video on YouTube, isn't there?
What about When Harry Met Sally?
Oh, no, that's an absolute nailed-on classic. Now, in the darkest days of lockdown, we watched that as a household.
I've seen the scene.
No, all of it is a lot.
The faking orgasm scene, that's it.
Well, that's the ultimate, can a man and a woman be friends?
Yes.
And it's,
which is a really actually interesting concept.
I also thought that film stood the test of time, I would say, based on my most recent viewing of it. What do you think of it?
Well, I agree, and I think it's a fantastic sentiment, and it stands the test of time. It's
I might give it a go.
Yeah. Working Girl. I don't know how you found a place in a modern business life if you've not seen Working Girl, really.
I know, what was it? I have a head for business and a bod for sin. I know that. I've seen the clips.
Yeah.
But I've never seen the whole thing.
Okay.
Melanie Griffith.
I found that.
Can't remember that at all.
I think, and Sigourney Weaver as well.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Do you remember that?
Dan Johnson? Not Dan Johnson, Dan... He was attractive for a while. He was in Miami Vice.
Don Johnson.
Was he in Working Girl or is that someone else?
I'm not.
We sound mad now.
Michael Douglas? Can't remember.
God. I tell you what.
Just say a man's name, any name. Douglas Michael?
If Mark Kermode and Simon Mayo were listening, feeling very smug about that. But Working Girl was the first time that I ever saw a woman... wearing trainers with a business outfit because, you know, she had to march to work and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know why, but that was just one of those hugely...
moments.
Influential. Yeah. I want to do that. I want to be so busy that I have to wear trainers to get somewhere.
What are you wearing today?
Trainers.
And I'm wearing trainers.
I'm wearing boots. Flat boots. Yeah. Well, okay. I can get places.
You've not seen the film.
No, I haven't. I'm excluded from this club.
Right, and a final one. What shall we pick? I mean, it is quite a long list, actually. It really is. What would Asma Mir not know by not having seen Blade Runner?
What even is that?
Oh, that's the futuristic. Harrison Ford's in that.
Oh, futuristic.
Oh,
no.
Don't you like that? I love a bit of that. Well, it's a bit depressing. Perhaps not one for you.
Okay. The better one to pick would have been Top Gun.
Oh,
yes.
Now.
So Stig constantly says, I need to watch that.
I bet he does.
Yes, it's all about boys who love each other.
Is it?
In a military setting.
Okay.
It is, isn't it?
It is. But do you know what? That's like one of those weird translations that they do sometimes where they've got it really wrong. You know, you're on a plane and the film has been dubbed. So instead of calling it Top Gun, it's called, what was it? Boys Fall in Love.
Boys Who Love Each Other in a Military Setting.
Yeah. Sounds like a category in a quiz show. Boys Who Love Each Other in a Military Setting. Go, your 10 seconds starts now.
Oh, that's celebrity pointless, isn't it? What's happened? Right. Asma. It's very, very nice to see you. Thank you very much indeed for taking the time out of your very busy day. A Glasgow Girl is a memoir of growing up and finding your voice. It's by Asma Mir. And it's very good. It's a very, very, we really, really love
it. You're not just saying that.
No, not just saying it at all. And just to entice people even more, it's a really brilliant conceit as well, isn't it? Because you write it with your mum. It's her experience as well. So it's a life looked at kind of two ways, and it's absolutely brilliant. And it's full of this lovely stuff as well about films and culture and sweeties in the 1970s too.
What was your favourite to end?
Favourite sweetie?
Drumstick.
Strawberry sherbets. Not the sherbet lemons. They're a bit too acidy. The strawberry sherbets.
Lovely.
Amazing.
Thank you, Asma.
Asma Mir's memoir is now called A Glasgow Girl, and it's out now. And both Jane and I really enjoyed it. It's got this fantastic conceit in it, hasn't it, where she writes her story and her mum writes her story. So you get two views from opposite sides of the bay, don't you, of all of the same things going on, and it's lovely.
Yeah, I thought that was a really fresh way to do this sort of book, and I'm not, that sounds a bit judgmental, but I really mean it, and it properly works. It's also really, really well written.
It is,
because not every book is.
No, well, as we've found out, I mean, quite a few broadcasters can't write.
That's true. However, Asma is an exception. So A Glasgow Girl is out now. Highly recommended. Right, we're back tomorrow. Keep your emails coming. janeandfee@times.radio.
Well done for getting to the end of another episode of Off Air with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
Our Times radio producer is Rosie Cutler, and the podcast executive producer is Henry Tribe.
And don't forget, there is even more of us every afternoon on Times Radio. It's Monday to Thursday, 3 till 5. You can pop us on when you're pottering around the house or heading out in the car on the school run.
Or running a bank. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you can join us again on Off Air very soon.
Don't be so silly. Running a bank.
I know, ladies.
A lady listener.
I know, sorry.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.